Hello and good evening, everyone, and welcome to the live stream live. I am your host, Joshua Schubart, and I hope you are doing well on this wonderful New York evening. As usual, I have a new show mug. It says, I love you, because oh, I really do. Thank you so much for being here. And I have great news, because guess what? I actually have a word from our sponsor. Boom. Lucas Roasting Company is this show's sponsor, and I wrote some really fun copy for it, and it's right up here, and it's really big, and I'm going to read it so I don't screw it up because I'm really excited. Nestled in the heart of Wolfboro, New Hampshire, is Lucas Roasting Company, dedicated to bringing you finely crafted roasts and coffee blends, a small family business that views coffee not only as a work of art, but as a way to showcase the origin and give back to the farmers. This small batch, award-winning coffee is roasted to order and shipped within days to maximize flavor and aroma. And, you know, I've actually been a huge fan of these, of this coffee for years. I've been actively buying it and actively drinking it for so long. So I'm so happy to have them. Oh, that's the wrong hand, as a partner on the show. And you can get 15% off your first order with the promo code, the live stream live. If you're watching this on Instagram, their link is in my bio. If you're on YouTube or if you're on Facebook, it is linked right there underneath the video or above the video, however, you know, that works on all the social medias. So Lucas Roasting Company, thank you so much for being our sponsor. I'm so excited. As usual, we are streaming live to Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram Live all at the same time. I will be able to field all of your questions and all of your comments. If you have any concerns, I do not care. I have a lovely show for you today. My special guest, his name is Andy Lucian. He is an incredible actor and even more lovely man, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. First, we're going to talk about my week and what's going on and what's been going on with me. So, and what I've been watching. So I've been watching season 2 of Arcane, and I have to tell you that that show is fucking incredible. I started to watch it when I was doing my stupid cardio, just as a thing to, you know, motivate me. But I have to watch every moment of the show, and it's hard for me because, you know, I'm a dad and I have other stuff to do, but it's incredibly written and incredibly well voice acted, and it looks amazing. And granted, I've played a lot of League of Legends, so it's kind of baked into kind of like what I'm used to seeing, but god, it is so freaking good. That was felt nice. I was good to have that water. Let's see, what else have I seen? I saw Moana 2. I saw Moana 2 in the movie theater with my daughter. And while I have to say I did enjoy it, and it was a lot of fun to see this world again and to get the next chapter, I will say that there were moments of it that felt extremely rushed. I don't know if any of you have seen it yet or have had this experience. They tried really hard to make it sound like Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote the music. There was one song in particular that The Rock sings or raps or whatever, that basically sounds like Alexander Hamilton. Like, it's exactly Alexander Hamilton, but it's like The Rock being like, you can do it, it's the ocean, blah, 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 I'm The Rock. It was very weird. But I mean, my daughter fucking loved it. So, kudos. It was a good film. Next up is I'm going to go see Gladiator. I really want to see that really badly. This weekend I got absolutely exploded with auditions, which is, great. I had like 4 commercials, one voiceover, and then one really incredible, meaty, gigantic, fun as fuck, amazing guest star role for a major TV show, for an incredibly explosive role that I'm super proud of. I spent so much time on it, and I love the work, and I love the character, and my manager loves it, and I'm so excited for casting to see it, and that's it. And now I gotta let it the fuck go, because that's as far as it's likely going to go. Do I hope that I book it? I do. But what's important is that I did this incredible work that everyone is very proud of, including myself, and I got the opportunity, and this really great office is going to see my really great, great work. And that's the reality of this industry a lot of the times, is that you just, that's as far as you get. You do really great work, and then people that you respect watch it, and then, and that's it. but that's fine. And you either love that part of it, or you won't go very, very far, which is fine. You don't have to. You can go as far as you need to. But I gotta more, yes. Anyway, so I made more bread today. This might be the best loaf of sourdough bread that I've ever made. It was like perfectly fermented. I made all the right cuts so that it wouldn't explode in the oven. It's beautiful. It's on the rack right now, and it's currently cooling. And my like journey into like giant sourdough daddy is one that I've just fully embraced. So I've made rolls. We've made pancakes. The next thing that I'm gonna do is I'm gonna make delicious sourdough cinnamon rolls for Christmas morning. So hopefully I don't mess that up at all. And then as for what's topical, so that United CEO got shot in broad daylight in New York City. And for the life of all law enforcement, they could not catch him. New York would not spit this guy out. And I don't know if I blame them. Insurance companies are, let's just say, hard to deal with a lot of the time. And say what you will, he's either a horrible villain or he's an incredible folk hero. But he got caught in a McDonald's, not even here. So, I mean, props to New York for keeping it locked down. I don't know what else to say, but you are not going to find him fucking here. No way. What do you all think about anything that I just said? Please, questions, comments, anything that you want to talk about, I will happily respond. But that is what's been going on with me, and I'd like to introduce Andy Lucian. He is so cool, and I'm about to bring him up. I mean, he has been straight killing it for the past 10 years, doing tons and tons of stage works, tons of TV and film. He was in the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. He was in, oh my God, the list just flew out of my head. I have it pulled up here. He was in Maisel. He was in Eric. He was in, what the fuck? He was in Daredevil. He was in The Blacklist. He was in Madam Secretary. He was in all this crazy shit that you've all seen. And here he comes, Andy Lucian. What up, baby?
How you doing, man? For a second, I'm like, who's he talking about?
I'm talking about you.
That's incredibly kind. I appreciate you.
Well, I mean, it's incredibly true. Like, it's not like it's a, like, I didn't just lie right now. Like, it's right here on your IMDb on my phone. So
I love the research department. You just had the phone right there. You're like, all right, bet.
Here it is. Yeah.
I appreciate you. It's incredibly kind. I mean, like, I get it. It's like some of the things, you know, as you're coming up, you understand if people miss them. Because like you have family members that'll be like, oh, I went to go get something in the other room and I missed your scene. And I was like, it's okay. The guy edited it.
Well, yeah, that's like the like reality of the beginning. You like walk on screen and like you're like, here's your muffin, and then you leave. And then everyone's like, what you just gave that guy a muffin, and then you're like, yeah, you see these size roles in a TV show, they're still important because they move along the story. But, yeah, you know, he needed a muffin so he could eat, so he could go outside and save the day.
The only way that Madam Secretary can have this press conference is if one of the reporters asks a question.
Yeah.
So I think it was right when my character was about to get a name that's when I think my time on that show ended. So I think I was Daniel or something.
That's always the way, right? Like, it's like, guess what? You're about to get upgraded to something cooler. We got canceled. Sorry.
Yeah. It was.
But you got like three episodes, right? Three or four?
It was four. And they were so lovely over at Madam Secretary. It was just such a great time. And they were really incredibly kind. My favorite was the day where it sometimes surprises people when you let them know how late some decisions are made. So I think it was right before we were about to roll and they were about to say action, and they made the decision to shave my face right there on the steps of a courthouse in the Bronx.
Dude,
so that is
classic TV right there.
Like, literally, all of a sudden, you just heard someone with a bag, just a makeup bag, running. And then it was just like, we paused for some reason where everyone was confused. We're like, why are we pausing? And then it's just literally, yeah, we're going to shave you. Okay. And then literally shave, we're going.
Isn't it wild how important that stupid shit is a lot of the time? Like, somebody looks at you in frame and they're like, something's fucked up. Like, something. Right. Like, what is it? And it's not that it's like you or like your facial hair or like anything. It's like they're like shot that feels better if something else happens. Yeah.
Yeah. They're telling the story and they're seeing it in a way that, because it's if you're comparing the amount of experience with the two mediums, this is rather new. So it's like in theater, I understand what they're doing a little better than on TV. I'm just like, I trust that you saw something that I didn't. Thank you. So, right. You know, literally just in that moment, everybody got there. They got in Video Village. They're like, we need to shave them now.
Yeah.
And I was just like, thank God I had already gone to my barber. So everything was just lined up. So they just literally just got rid of all the facial hair. And I mean, it was a kind of a shave job that I was so grateful didn't immediately result in just razor bumps.
Yeah, just bleeding also.
That was what it was. I was like, oh, okay, what's my line? Because my face might bleed.
Did they at least like lotion you afterwards or like anything nice?
No,
they were just like, go. Yeah.
Like, oh, I took care of that immediately. I was like, oh no, they've compensated me to the point where I think I can take care of this on my own.
I can take care of this myself, yeah.
But yeah, they just immediately shaved right on the steps of the courthouse that we were filming in the Bronx. And yeah, that was just, and it was funny because it was winter. So you're old trying to pretend you're not. And then everything on your face that keeps you warm is now just
gone.
So yeah, in that moment, I remember feeling like the temperature just dropped about 25 degrees.
Yeah, I'll do it. Facial hair is your like natural body's magical.
Boy.
Yeah, it protects your face. Funny.
Because the thing is like I wasn't gifted with the mane that you have. So it was like,
yeah, but you also don't have the massive amounts of body hair all over the rest of you like I do. So, you know, it's a slippery slope, right? Like,
I mean, it's manly. That's what it is, right? That's what
it sure is.
That's all it takes, right?
That's all it takes. But that's what happened to me when I was on the tick. So I had like hair that was like, you know, a lot like this, which I like a lot. And they like I walked into hair and makeup, and they were like, we're gonna just like shave all of the sides of your head and the back of your head off. And I was like, what are you gonna do? They're like, we're just gonna shave it up to the like to the lines here and just give you like a crazy bouffant with like a ton of mousse, and you're just gonna live like that for 3 years, okay? And I was like, sure, fine. And it turned out great, but like in the moment, you're like, just commit. You're gonna be like this in public, but it's okay. Just fucking do it.
And it's crazy. I remember for that series, Eric, the growing out of the hair and then the shaving down to just a mustache to match like 80s cop. And that was an interesting conversation.
I really loved seeing you in that show, man.
Oh, I appreciate you, man.
That show was special, and I don't think it got enough credit. Like, for whatever reason, people like didn't, from maybe when it came out or whatever, but I mean, it was really well done, and I was surprised because, like, it's like fucking Benedict Cumberbatch, and he's playing like a really dark, sophisticated role. So I was like, why isn't everybody just like blowing up about Eric? But I saw you, and I was like, that's my boy Andy, yeah, and he's doing great, and he's fucking great.
I appreciate you. It really was a fun series to do, and it was a really fun thing to work on. But you're right. When it came out, it's in that window, right? Where it's just like a whole bunch of stuff is happening at the same time. And as a result, it's like, well, some things are getting missed. Yeah. So it's like, if you saw it, it felt like a lot of people appreciated it and really liked it. But then a lot of people missed it. And one thing I'm realizing more and more now is we're not going back and watching things. So like, I remember... I mean, like, it's not even that far ago. Like, in 2018, it felt like people would go back and watch a movie from 2013.
Dude, but I don't even understand what that's about, right? Because we have access to all of it still. It's on.
But there's so much coming out, though.
Yeah, I know, but it's like, there's lulls, right? And then...
We are in a lull.
And then, but no one's going back to watch anything. Like, I guess there's nothing here. It's like, bitch, there's 7 billion hours of shit to watch that you haven't seen. Just go and watch it.
I get it. But it's like, if you're at a library, right? And they keep shipping in new books. And it's just like, after a while, it's like, oh, I forgot about the books I wanted to read because there's a whole bunch of books in front of me. Even if they're not bringing them in after a while. I'm just trying to be like, you know, gracious to the people who are missing things.
No, I mean, do you think it's like an oversaturation problem? Like, people just can't handle it?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, like, I think there was that model, and particularly it got like ramped up as a result of like, you know, everybody seeing how successful streamers were. So now everybody kind of like jumps in, and then they have a whole new slew of shows. And the only time anyone really had to watch all of them was probably lockdown.
I guess so, yeah.
When it was just like, oh, I can watch a show and I can watch other shows. And like new shows were like, sweet Jesus, because Ozark was big. But when that season came out in like April of lockdown, everybody watched it.
Oh, yeah. Everyone. Well, yeah. I mean, because we were like getting drunk, watching TV, and, like going on Zoom.
I was really excited because that was the season a friend of mine joined. So, because she's one of those like theater veterans, like just always doing like regional and stuff like that and never really getting the due that she deserved. Name's Jessica Frances Dukes. And she played like an agent that season, and she's now in this show, Earth Abides. But it was interesting to kind of watch that happen, because as soon as now she's on the show and everyone's watching it, you're watching in real time someone's life kind of change, which is really exciting.
That is exciting.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's one of the good and the bad things about oversaturation, because it's like, yeah, there's a lot, so there's a lot to choose from, but we're also missing a heck of a lot that's like really, 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 really awesome.
Yeah, so. Which is very disappointing. Like I mean, like we're like students of this whole industry. So yeah. We watch more than probably like the like average person does, and I still miss a lot of stuff.
I mean, how can you catch it all?
Yeah,
and you got a kid. I mean, come on, how would you be able to watch everything?
I don't. I stay up later than I'm supposed to. And I like do like I do other work, and I like, you know, prep for this thing, and you know, you know, stuff like that. And then I get like 6 hours of sleep, and then I work out, and then, you know, blah, 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 you know, like, but like,
and because a lot of times, oh, just to in what was it, 2020 into 2021, the SAG has all the awards and nominations, right? So they have like the selection committee and it rotates. So that was the year that I was on the selection committee that year.
Oh, that had to be a lot of work. That was a lot of work. It sounds fun, but it's
not. It was so much fun. I saw so many movies.
Yeah.
I had very strong opinions about the awards that year. And you know me, that was the only year where I had notes. I had choices. I had dark horses. I had everything. My list looked totally different from what was nominated. But what was interesting is I noticed I didn't sit to watch a movie again for maybe 7 months.
Yeah, you get burnt out, man. Like, yeah, I'm in the Television Academy, so I pick who, like, wins.
Yeah, there you go.
But I'm not on the nominating committee, but even the, like, pre-screen of the nominations,
yeah,
it's very intense, and it's not, like, the way that they want you to do it is things are nominated out of specific episodes, and they want you to watch that specific episode without taking in the whole entire body of work.
Just jump right in, and
I have a hard time doing that because I'm like, I don't understand context with any of this. Like, if I hadn't watched The Bear, because like last time it was nominated for season two, and then the episode that was nominated was that like Christmas episode that like had like everybody in it, and like it was fucking crazy. And if I hadn't seen the rest of the season and I just saw that, I'd be like, what in the fuck is this show? Right? Like, so, but it's the same thing. Like, I'm like, okay, I watched 100 episodes of TV, and you know, and now I want to blow my brains out and I won't watch TV for like a couple of weeks. I will say that it is a huge honor to be able to do these things, like you being on the SAG-AFTRA committee. Like, it's like being able to champion your peers is very special.
Yeah, no, it's I would do it again in a heartbeat. It was so I cannot stress this enough. So many movies. This was when like the tail end of when I was still having DVDs. So there was like boxes of DVDs by the end. But that being said, I'd do it again tomorrow if they asked. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. And there were a lot of really cool movies that I wouldn't have seen otherwise, because I just don't know how I would have heard about them. So yeah, and what was really exciting about that is that then you meet new directors, new actors, new screenwriters, new people that you could then now start watching their work.
Right.
And be like, oh, like there was this Nicole Bahari film, Miss Juneteenth.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
For most people, that movie went completely under the radar. But like it's really good. And I remember telling a whole bunch of people, like, please check this movie out because it's really good. And I mean, Nicole Bahari is fantastic, but just the movie and all of it was just like really good. And I remember thinking, I was just like, for as connected as I am and in the industry, I don't remember how I would have heard about that movie if it wasn't for that at that time. So, you know, these are as much as it's the industry version of complaining.
Sure.
It's like, oh my God, I have to watch all these movies.
Oh my God, I have to do what I like to. I have to watch what I like to do.
Exactly. It was the closest thing to being in an office that I could possibly say.
Right. Yeah, yes.
But you're just getting to watch world-class people.
I would like to rewind a whole shit ton. Sure. And so Andy is from New York. He's from Jamaica, Queens. He grew up there during a time where it was a little bit more sketchy than it is now. and I love your whole story. You have a great story. Just how you came up, your parents, like your father was a cab driver. Just like as New York as you can fucking get. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was just two immigrant New York, like Haitian immigrants. I believe my father came over in 74, and my mom came over in 75. And for those not familiar with like Haitian history, at that point, that was now the second generation of dictatorship in Haiti at the time. Mm-hmm. 12 years later, about 12 years later, it was overthrown. But I mean, like, it came into power, I think, in the 60s. So up until that point, they had lived only in a dictatorship. And then they come to the U.S. which is like a very different way of living, particularly in the 70s. Sure. So between them, I believe they are fluent in 4 to 7 languages.
That is so fucking crazy, man. Like, just the, like, when you first told me that, I was like, how the fuck? Like, you know, but it makes sense, right? Like, if you have to leave, like, if you have to leave where you're from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just jump right in. But my father is fluent in Haitian Creole, French. English was his third language.
Damn.
He speaks Spanish, Latin, I believe, and a little Greek. I just found out the 6th language at Thanksgiving. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. So he speaks and or understands about 6 languages. And my mom, I believe it's 3 or 4, Creole, French, English, and Spanish. I believe she has some familiarity with Spanish. And I always say that me and my siblings are those slackers who understand 2, maybe 3 languages.
It is truly, and it's purely an American trait to just be like, I'm not learning any more languages. I'm going to just speak English. I'm fucking fine with that.
Yo, I got my ass whooped. My grandmother, you remember her, she came over the year I was born, and she was not learning English. So she only spoke Haitian Creole, and at the time, I think that's why French wasn't a language we also spoke in the house, because she didn't speak French. So, I mean, Haitian Creole was learned along with English to be 100%. I believe Haitian Creole was my first language, and then I learned English from the world. So, I mean, like, we grew up in the Jamaica, Queens area, specifically Queens Village. Yeah, it was a very, very working class family. I mean, my dad was a cab driver until 2020. I think it was like from the mid-80s until 2020. Wow. Yeah. You know, we can get into a whole conversation about what ride sharing did to, you know, his industry.
Right, I just fucked it up. Yeah, I'm sure. Just blew it apart.
Man, and he owned a medallion. So it was like in 2014, it was valued at about $750,000. And then by like 2 years later, it was like nothing. Because realistically.
Because of Uber and stuff?
Yeah.
Shout out to Queens Village. I just got in the chat here.
Well, I can't see that side, but, you know, it was good. But yeah, it was. Yeah, because it's literally it's a whole group of working class people who don't have the access to what's happening on the other end of their business. So they don't have any heads up
about
what's coming.
Right. It just slams into them.
I mean, realistically, he didn't hear about a company called Uber popping up in California. And by the time I was coming back to tell him about it, it was too late.
Right.
So realistically, at the time, this is when they introduced green cabs. So like,
right.
Remember that little thing that they, when they were trying to, like,
these only go to Brooklyn. Shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. They're trying to, cabs was making so much money. They're like, oh, let's do some offshoots. And then Uber comes in, and much like food delivery in our industry, kind of like, make things easier, and then
let's disrupt an industry that doesn't need it. I don't know why I'm quoting, because that's true.
Oh yeah, it's let's disrupt the industry, let's undercut it, let's, you know, siphon it, and then no one actually makes any money. So
when can you pinpoint, did you actually win like a baby competition? Is I'm that real?
So when I was born, there was a lot of controversy. And this was, I'm going to see if I can pull up the
phone. How am I not going to ask you this fucking question? You know,
I mean, it's because you're doing your job. That's why.
It's my job. Yeah. It's about the world's sexiest baby twice.
Two times. I'm pulling up the photo. But
show it to the world. Show it to the whole internet.
Because what you'll understand is the controversy. The controversy was at the time, I was up for World Sexiest Man, but the winner of that year, I believe it was Tom Cruise, threw a fit because I had just been born. So, I mean, technically he had a good argument. So
Tom Cruise is old. Jesus Christ. But what he happened? Looks so young. He's so old, but he looks so young still.
It's true. I'm pulling up
all the e-meters and stuff.
Because realistically, there was a panel. I was told there was a whole bunch of muscling. Apparently, he would never do a cover again. And then they came to my parents. They said, look, Tom's very upset. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a different category, but only for these 2 years, of World's Sexiest Baby. So my dad, what he did was he posed me in this like kind of position on crushed red velvet.
Wait, this is fucking real? Like, this is a real thing?
No.
Okay, right.
But he posed me on crushed red velvet and put a chain around my neck and put me in some shorts.
Let me see. So, back it up. Oh, look at that. Look at your little shorts.
Yeah, oh, let's see if I can bring it down so you can see the crisp blackness on my skin.
But and not the crazy redness
of all of everything. But yeah.
Look at that chain.
That baby is not cute. That baby is sexy.
So, I mean, I will not say a baby is sexy, but I will say that's a very good looking baby.
So I always joke, in all seriousness, I always joked around that had to be my father that took that photo, because who else would put me on the crushed velvet and then wait until I got into the right pose, just looking off, looking just aloof enough. And because my mom never took the picture, so it had to be my dad. And knowing my dad, he waited. He was like, he's my son, he's going to get in the position. And I did, and he took the photo.
I know him. I know his personality. He's
like, just wait. And my mom's probably been like, it's been 6 hours, but it's just like, mm-mm.
We have a big fan of the red velvet. There's a lot of exclamation points. So how did your parents react to you being like, I want to be an artist. I want to be an actor.
They didn't really have a reaction because I tricked them.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you remember, man, when we first met, when I went to college, I went to become, I was in psychology.
You were, so, yeah. Andy and I went to school together. We went to undergrad together. And I got to watch him in class, and we got to be in a lot of shows together and, have a great time. But yeah, so you tricked him.
But I did. Because originally I went to college to become a marriage counselor. That was actually why I wanted to go to school. And then the stereotype of I followed a girl to an audition. Shout out and rest in peace to her. But I remember being so bored because I had beaten every video game that I had to the point where the thought of playing it again made me physically angry. So, like, I was also at the point in my youth where you're like, oh, I can't tell my girlfriend I want to be around her because that would seem clingy. So, like, she was going to go watch somebody do, like, this open audition thing. So I was like, oh, I'll come too and sit, like, three rows behind you. And she's just looking over like, you're silly and you make no sense, but all right. But it was interesting because when I was watching, I remember having one of the more arrogant moments of my life where I was like, I think I can do that. So I went, I auditioned. This was at a campus of LIU before we even started going to school together. That's down in Stony Brook. That school ended up closing down. But when I got the show, when I got in the show and then I did the main stage production later that year, I invited my parents to the show, but I never told them that this was something I was considering doing. I transferred schools. And then by my final year, I realized I hadn't taken a psych class in 2 years. But by the time you were over at Stony Brook, I had now loaded my entire schedule to graduate with a theater degree. So here's where I tricked my parents, because I got them to come and see a couple productions. They were like, holy crap, you're not shy. I was just like, okay.
Did they see Medellin?
No.
Oh, they, man.
Las Meninas. They did.
Yeah, Las Meninas.
They did. They did see that one. That was uncomfortable. But when I told them I wanted to be an actor, I told them about MFA programs because I was like, oh, I can teach with my MFA. And It wasn't alive.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, I can teach with it. It's stability. It's a life of health insurance and a retirement. And then you're like, fuck you. I'm not doing that.
Right. I just never told them when I planned on teaching.
Yeah.
So what started to happen is just by luck, when you finish grad school and then started to get into some productions, it was like, look, this is actually allowing me to pay some of my bills. It's allowing me to support myself. And then they're like, oh, okay, I think he's doing this. It wasn't a thing of, hey, I think I want to be an actor without degrees and productions to back it up. So really, they got the news, I want to say 10 years into me starting to act. Wow, like I told them, yeah, I told them the past rather than the future.
That's actually probably really smart, like just because I know a lot of people that have like first generation immigrant parents, and when they were like, I want to be an artist, like they're like, you want to do fucking what now? Like, you need to go make money somewhere that sucks so that you can feed your family. And it's like, it's a whole, you know, like you know, like when you're born here versus when you immigrate here, it's a totally, I mean, I was born here, so I can only speak from that side. Yeah. And I only have observational knowledge, right?
Yeah. But
it just seems like being born here makes you feel like you can almost do anything.
Yeah, it was, and it was really a privilege, honestly. I mean, it was a privilege born of the fact that they were working as hard as they were.
Yeah. I mean,
my mom just doing odd jobs for going on, what, 5-6 decades now? So it's just like her working as hard as she did, my grandmother being there to provide day-to-day childcare.
Very helpful.
Yeah. My older sister going off to the military. My brother sitting here getting into construction and doing all of this type of stuff. So it was just like, I think I'm going to go the artistic way. Like, it was just, it didn't make sense. No one had a frame of reference for talking about what work was. What are the demands of your job? What are all of these things? They didn't know. But it was one of these things where they're just like, okay, led by my older sister, where it was just like, well, let's learn. Okay. So when the play starts, we have to be there. Like, we can't come in and no previews. Like, it's just like those things where they're learning a language.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, who had invited us to the theater? I mean, Josh, I think we knew each other before I had ever been to a Broadway play. I think I was 21 the first time I had ever. It was Spring Awakening.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was Spring Awakening.
Well, that's a good one to be the first one. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Kim who we went to Spring Awakening together. And that was the first time where it went out of the, this is fun, but I'm so working class, this can't be a thing you actually pursue. And then it was when John Gallagher Jr. hit, I don't do sadness. Mm-hmm. Man, I got to tell you, I didn't understand how a fucking musical worked. I understand how to follow the story. I wasn't quite sure what world we were in. All I knew is I saw that dude and I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah, man. It changes your life. It changes you.
It did. There was a different way. And I think because at that point I had always looked at y'all as having so much more experience than me. So it was always that thing of just like, well, maybe if I could apply the same way that my dad would apply to like cab driving, that kind of work ethic, let me try to get into this. But it was just, I remember my grandmother was a huge champion of it. She probably figured it out before everybody else did.
Probably.
So like we were doing, I think you remember this, when we were doing Grapes of Wrath.
Oh yeah, Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah, they were an hour late. And the reason that they were late was because my grandmother made them turn around and come and get her.
Oh, so she could see you.
So she could see the show.
Yeah, well, you were incredible in that.
Oh, I appreciate you. So are you. And what was great about it was
that
ended up being the last show that she could see before she passed away.
Well, I'm happy that she saw you in that.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. She even had like this smug look on her face afterwards when my mom was like, okay, so yeah, we missed the first act, but it was grandma's fault. And grandma just kind of looked at me like, and I was just like, okay. Once I saw her, so it was like when she passed, it was really difficult because there was that moment of, do I continue doing this? Because for me, it was like, well, she's never going to see me be able to do this again. So it's right. Like, well, fuck. Well, then why am I doing it? And then before I really had a chance to think about it, I just threw myself back on the horse. And then just kind of feeling like, well, she's here. Whether or not she's here.
She's here. Yeah. She's with you. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was, yeah. And it's like that with a lot of the loved ones that have passed. It's just like before the show, you have a moment with them. And then, like, you know, you have moments on stage where it's just like, okay, it'll be these divine moments where it's like, well, I didn't think of that improv line to cover the fact that prop wasn't there.
Right. It just came
out of my mouth.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, they're still here and they're funnier than I could ever hope to be. So, yeah.
I mean, you have been consistently working in either TV, film, or on stage since you left school. And I was never shocked. I always expected you to just kind of break out of school and just fucking roll. Working with you in school and in class and watching you work on things and be in things with you and how you approach this work is so raw and visceral and incredible. And anytime I got to like come and see you professionally, I was always so just in awe of how you create a character. So I mean, I'm so happy that you are here and I'm able to like talk to you about everything, just because like, shit, man, like, you know, this is a hard ass industry and it's hard to stay here and it's hard to work in. And you have to have a lot of things set in your head and in line. And especially in your case, if what you love to do starts to hurt you physically. Yeah, I mean, you have a very particular thing where you're one of the first people that I've ever seen publicly speak about this part of our job, which is that we get hurt a lot and we don't have time to heal because we have to continue to work or to be in the show or to move forward. And you notably got fucked up more than anyone that I've ever encountered. Like, and I wanted to, when I came at like when you were in that
show that is you, me.
Yeah, your back was so fucking fucked up that you could barely walk, but you wouldn't be able to tell because you were in it on stage. But when we went out afterwards, you fucking yelled at me because I was walking too fucking fast. Like, but
oh shit, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I found out later because the immediate injury that the doctors wanted to address immediately was the three herniated discs in my neck that were leaking fluid. Because it was like the fluid, because remember back then I could move my arms, but I couldn't feel them.
Right.
So the discs just started to leak. So because they leaked, that was causing numbness and a tingling and a sensation. So there was that. But once that got kind of settled, they were like, oh, so now that we've dealt with that, there's also a back fracture.
Yeah.
So, so that I've been in physical therapy since 2017. I went earlier today. I'm doing great, by the way.
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, there is a possibility that I'm crossing my fingers. I doubt either of my physical therapists are watching. If they are, hello. But I'm just saying that next year, I'm hoping, is my last year of physical therapy. Because
I mean, it's been a long road, man.
Yeah, it's been several presidents.
Yeah, and you have had like an article published that I remember, which is linked. Like, you can go read it. But I remember you being very scared that it was going to ruin your career because no one was talking about this. Like, nobody would talk about how employers didn't give one fuck about how you were doing. They just wanted you to put the show up.
Yeah. It's what was interesting. Thank you. Technical support came and helped with lights.
Yeah, he was looking really ugly, so I'm happy that you put light on him.
I remember writing the article. It actually took a year to write the article, partially because it was hard to go there at first, because like I was in constant pain. We had people not celebrating, but their careers were doing this off of my back. Hi, Tyne Raffaele. I'll name that name 17 times before breakfast.
Yeah.
It was this thing where it's just like, how is this real? Because I remember this thing of your, when you came to see the show, there was a sense of, I'm pushing through this. I'm getting all these accolades because I'm playing five characters in a show where I can't get an MRI.
Right.
Because there's something happening with insurance. And me and Catherine Kovner and Playwrights Realm ended up making up. But at the time, the insurance, people were denying my injury as I was performing for them.
Because it's a lack of understanding about what a performer does in order to do stuff. Also, you have always been and are now in really great shape. So, yeah.
Appreciate you coming from homie. All right. But no, I mean, that was one of those things. It was one of the things I encountered was finding out that I had heard about it. And I guess I had kind of put it in the back of my mind because you can't always deal with the things that you deal with every day. And that doesn't make sense. And what I mean by that is I had known for like medical problems, people don't believe black men feel pain or black people feel pain.
Yeah, I was hoping that you would bring that up.
But it was shocking to be sitting there in situations with, again, at the time, me and, I want to be very specific, Catherine Kovner and Playwrights Realm have made up. Tyne Raffaele is still Tyne Raffaeling. But doctors sitting there trying to disprove your injury. The insurance company's doctors trying to do that. They sent me to an independent medical examiner, and I shit you not, it was on the other side of Queens in Flushing at 8 a.m.
Oh, nice.
And I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, so how do I get from Astoria to Flushing at 8 a.m. when I can't really feel my arms? And for some reason, everything beneath my neck hurts. So figure that out. The guy's an hour and a half late. And then when he gets there, he's an 80-year-old. And that's being generous. He was an 80-year-old man who said he can't really hear that well.
So perfect person that you want to check you out.
Yeah. So as he's doing this exam, I'm saying that hurts. And he's like, you can't hear me. So which I then get back the medical exam where he's told both the Workers' Compensation Board, the state of New York, and additionally the insurance company that I'm fine. So
yeah, we just got a comment saying that Workers' Comp is controlled by the people who pay them, which is the business. So it makes sense.
It it's tough because like if you look at the history of Workers' Comp, I ended up having to find all this out. But like the history of workers' comp is that this was made in order to help the worker originally.
Originally, yeah.
Yeah, because it was like it took so long to sue an employer that this became a form of arbitration. And one of the things that no one knows is that once you go through workers' comp, you can't sue your employer. And that's all industries. So,
oh, really? I didn't know that. Yeah.
Now you know.
Now I know. Now everybody knows.
Now everybody knows. If you agree to go through, so like you're at a rehearsal, they hand you that incident report. You sign it, you pass it in, you have given up the right to sue your employer. That being said, it's like it speeds up your medical. But if it is a situation where you're not sure about whose fault it is, this is something way out. But again, medical, everything with has the recent news has shown that motherfuckers are starting to take shit into their own hands. Healthcare is so expensive in this country that, you know, it puts you into a situation where you just want to shoot a motherfucker.
Yeah.
So it was one of those situations where I then had to get a lawyer. I had to go to court a whole bunch of times. I won each and every time we went to court. But every time you win, you're like, did I win?
Yeah.
So eventually I got treatment. The treatment kept getting like caught up and all these type of things. So yeah, I finally ended up at an office where they were working on how I think about the injuries, because they said one thing about advocating for yourself when you're injured, you have to use language that kind of sends your body the message you can't do certain things. And they were trying to undo that.
Sure.
So my physical therapist, which is Perfect Strides Physical Therapy in Union Square, if anyone's looking.
Shout out.
Exactly. Megan and Maddie, what up? But Vikash, what up? And they're not watching. But
but what if they are, Andy? What if they are,
what up? But what was interesting was that they were working on the mental aspect of it. So then they got me to a point where it was just like, your body's a lot stronger than you think it is. You've just had to advocate for it. And one of the things that I think a lot of people, working class, anyone who's injured, anyone, the hill you have to climb is so fucking steep and hard that you're so tired you don't realize the strength it took you to get up this high.
Yeah.
So I remember in 2017 when I was trying just to get an MRI, a doctor told me, you just have to get this treated. So me at, you know, at a different, you know, part in my masculine journey was trying to make a joke out of it, you know, just to break tension. So I said to him, I was like, what, my arm's going to fucking fall off? And then he stopped. He looked away, took this pause, and then looked back at me. He's like, you have to get this treated. And then he said, I'm going to give you the room for a moment, and walked off. Oh. And I'm sitting there in this hospital, in this like doctor's office in my early, you know, and I'm still a young man, just really young, and sitting there thinking, is my career over? Yeah. So like, to get to what you were talking about, is there's the part where you're thinking, is my career over when I'm in an operating table? But there's also the thing is, just because I ended up talking about what happened to me and saying that this shouldn't happen to me or any actor, did I just end my career there? So right. I just sat there and just like, all right, well, I mean, I survived not being able to scratch my head for a couple months. I survived the doctor's table. Hopefully I'll survive this. And I remember the article, because before the article, there was a blog post from the Lark when they were still a thing. And that went live. And I was scared shitless. And I'm just like, yo, who's going to... I remember I was going to do my first play because I wasn't medically cleared to do theater for almost 2 years. And I was going to go do my first play. And I told the creative team, hey, here's a thing I did. I understand if you guys want to cast somebody else. Yeah. They, of course, didn't think that. And then what shocked me was the amount of support that came in.
And, it didn't shock me because
I appreciate you.
It just because it's not, you know, like it's not a fucking secret. It's a thing that like one person's got to be the first person to say something, right? Like, and you did it. That takes
the thing, not to cut you off, Josh, but it was like, yo, I wasn't the first person. What shocked me about my essay was how common it was.
Oh, okay.
Like there were a whole bunch of essays basically saying like the same thing. Before me, there were black women who were saying this thing before me. There were people of color. There were white actors who were talking this about me. Huh. And part of it was one of the things where there was a part where I was sitting there thinking, oh, is this just going to be another whisper in the wind? Because you're right. It wasn't very common. But there were other articles that had come out before mine. And it was interesting because when it hit, I mean, honestly, it's funny you say this because I do believe it's like 6 years ago this week or something like that, that I posted that blog. It just hit a time where people were paying attention.
I guess so. Yeah.
And then It really hit. And what I did, I tried to, it's never popular to say that you, I learned a lot about writing that essay from this comedy special that I watched.
Okay.
And it was a comedian that was talking about the Me Too movement. And yes, I'm talking about Dave Chappelle, but but it was one of those things where he was talking about what happened to him. And there's so much with him where I was just like, your pain blinds you, but that's your issue to deal with, rich 50-year-old man. But like, there was a pain that I saw when he's talking about what happened with his show, and it's deep and it's never been resolved. But he made this comparison to the industry and like the business between pimps and prostitutes. And when he made that comparison, it allowed me to sit back and look at not just this instant, but my entire history in this industry. And was like, okay, where are the moments that I didn't value myself enough?
Yeah.
Led to this.
Yeah. Because
this injury doesn't happen in a vacuum. No. So I looked at how I viewed masculinity as part of that. I was just like, yo, if I wasn't just a little bit of a hothead at the time, I would have been like, no, I'm hurt. Stop. But, you know, you come from sports and it's just like, oh, let me just push through. And what that had to do, I remember this older actor saying to me, he's like, did anyone who was, because three actors were made and massively injured in that show. And this older actor said, was any actor over the age of 35 injured? And I said, no. He's like, you see? And
yeah, I guess so. I mean, I have also gotten like really fucked up in my career. Like I've gotten stabbed.
Yes,
like,
you have.
For broken ankles. I've gotten really messed up. And, I won't get hurt now. Like,
oh, no, fuck
I that. Fucking refuse to. Like, fuck. I'll, you know, but certainly when in the beginnings, especially in school, like you're taught to,
yes, you to are.
Destroy yourself, or you used to be. Like, from what I understand now, that's not how shit's being taught anymore. And I am mm-hmm. very pleased to hear it. But when we were coming up, we were taught to just like put your body through a fucking blender and keep going. And, you know, like, yeah.
Especially if you went to grad school. So it was like that thing where everyone was regurgitating the trauma that they had ingested.
Right.
And they're now, you know, man, between put your body on the line and you are less than because you were black that I dealt with in grad school.
Yeah.
So it was,
that's a whole nother layer.
I mean, as a, there's that too. And it was interesting listening to you talk about the trajectory of my career. Because what was funny is when I first came out, I was like, if I can get one person to be interested in what I have to give, I'll make sure that they never regret it. And it was interesting to then see that people were interested. Because to me, I was genuinely shocked. I was like, oh, in grad school, I was a horse that wasn't bet on.
Yeah, you had a hard time in school. So
I mean, it could have been worse. I mean, like, had I been at that program as a woman, it would have been way worse. So, I mean, my classmate, Bianca Washington, is fantastic actress, had the bad luck of being both black and female there at the same time. So, I mean, as bad as me and one of my classmates had it, I've always said none of us came close to having it as bad as she did. So, I mean, like, that might be another abused way of looking at things. But
no, I mean, like, theater programs have historically been terrible to anyone who isn't a white man. So it's just how it's been. And it has only recently really begun to change. And I haven't really seen any evidence that it has changed very drastically. Right. Like, it's, I mean, yes, yeah. Yes and no, you know, like, it's certainly not like. In my graduate class, we had one white presenting Hispanic man, mm-hmm. and everyone else was white.
Yeah.
So
I've always argued, because it's interesting. Because I even looked at some stuff with the world that was presented to some of my classmates and think, man, you aren't doing them a service either. I mean, I feel like it was like y'all fucking them up too.
Right.
Because there was either the world of, well, we're used all the time. And it's just like, yeah, but you're not used the way you would be in the profession. And then they had this thing where they had the Prince Charming, you know, and I remember the dude in my class, he's a really good dude, but he didn't want to play those roles.
Right.
And the dude and like the people of color in the class are just like, honestly, I think there's an interesting way that I can come up, but that's not how you're being seen. So, you know, you learn some stuff there, but you also learn like some really bad habits. So when I was writing that article, I think I had to look at all of it.
Sure.
And I think the title, I had this title, it was like, why I broke up with the American theater. And what was interesting about it was the amount of people that wanted to take it literally. And what was funny was, as my boy put it, he's like, you're breaking up with abuse. You can't not do theater because right. You have to work.
You have to work and you're also really good at it.
Yeah, a lot of people watching, we're labor in the theater. Mm-hmm. I mean, the techs, fuck the playwrights, the directors, like we're labor. So it's like, you know, we like to think, oh, it's an art, it's a gift. It's so much, but nah, fuck that, motherfucker. I'm working.
I have to make money. Yeah.
Right. And see, I mean, but that's why you and I got along back in school. We knew that shit. But it was like this thing where it's like, you know, it was like there were people who definitely knew that. And we all fucked with them when we were there. But it was like you go through and, you know, there's this way that, you know, the academics can get you to think about something to forget the fact that, oh, no, I'm labor. And
yeah,
labor is mistreated.
I mean, you gave me a lot of grace when we first met, because I came into... I was a pretentious dick when I first came in. I was like, you know, like, fuck, man. I was like, I'm an actor. Fuck everybody. I came from this other school with this other program, and I do all the Shakespeare, and you can suck my legs, blah, blah, blah. You know, and like, you were one of the first people that were just like, why don't you shut the fuck up? Like, why are you like this? And I was like, I don't actually know. Like, I was taught that this is how I'm supposed to be by my other program. I guess I don't have to be this way. I can just be a person and still be a great artist and let's go make some money in the future. And like, yeah, you were one of the people that really helped, like, knocked my ass back down to earth. And I really appreciated that.
Oh, I appreciate that, homie. It was funny because I remember I auditioned at your school for one show. And before the audition, they did like this kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it. But it was like everybody was like statues and shit. And then they were moving to different positions.
Yeah.
Like the director would like hit something and then y'all would all jump into a different fucking position.
Oh yeah. It was a lot of warm-ups and a lot of like,
yeah. Like, but this was at an audition though, homie. So I'm like looking at this, you know, if anyone has never seen like the New Zealand national basketball team playing Team USA from like 2021, please go watch that. And the reason I say it is because they have this beautiful tribal thing that they do, and it's so beautiful. But I'm watching something like this at an audition, yeah, thinking, we're just the dude playing the dude, pretending to be the other dude. Can we just get to the work?
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah.
I know. So, I mean, like, that's where, so when I met you, and I remember where you go, I was like, oh. I was like, no.
He came from that place that did all that culty stuff.
But I got it. And I will say this. I mean, there was always, and I think we're all at various parts of our, if we're in the arts, we've drank some Kool-Aid from somewhere.
Yeah.
And it was just like, how much Kool-Aid have you drank? And right. I remember having a conversation which was just like, oh, I don't think he's drank as much as he thinks he has. Oh, cool. I'll give him like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was interesting because then, like, the next time we spoke, you were like a totally different person. I was like, I fucking knew it.
Yeah. I mean, once you're not in, like, immersed in a thing like that, and it was really, dude, like, we did Bob Rauschenberg America.
Yeah.
And it was getting shout out to Laura Stanley. Oh, God, that woman. I love her so much. She changed my life. And I actually have to tell her now how much she changed my fucking life. She changed my whole perspective. So I was doing straight method acting, just fucked up all the time. Just mentalist, all my trauma, all my past shit, just always just out, just blowing up. And she taught us viewpoints in this beautiful, magical show where we all got to just exist with each other. And she blew my fucking artistic world open.
What was interesting is I remember that with you specifically and seeing how that affected you.
Yeah.
And because before then, I think I had only done one show using like the stereotypical American method.
Mm.
And it was one of the undergrad shows that was put on, it was called Touch. And it started off with that 15-minute monologue about how the love of my life was raped and murdered. And she's not even in the play. And then it's just like him going through it. And I remember every night at intermission, because at the end of act one is when my character finds her body. And like sobbing for the entire intermission. And then the show ends because it was a student production. So really you only get like what, 6 performances?
Yeah, something like that.
And I remember for weeks being sad. And I remember thinking, I can't do this like this.
Yeah.
It takes too much. And then there was that, I think Meryl Streep's talked about it. And I think Brian Tyree Henry has talked about it, about in the more extreme cases where people have behaved a certain kind of way because they're method actors. So let me send you used condoms. I think Brian Tyree Henry, he said it best. He's like, I'm black. I can't be a method actor. And he was just basically, when they went into that interview, he was just like, this behavior wouldn't be okay for me. And
that actually makes a lot of sense.
It's just like, you don't hear it. Viola Davis, all of these wonderful, all these actors throughout all these generations. How many women method actors do you really know? Like, it's just like, there's some people who that kind of eccentricity is celebrated, because we have given more time and grace and space for the fullness of their humanity. And most people don't get that. So as a result, they have to find a different way to get to the part, because realistically, that's just not going to be okay from them. And right. I think before I knew that, because I was just like, oh, okay, I'm crying over a partner that doesn't exist. And I'm sad at my dorm room, but I have a date with my girlfriend later.
Right.
This is confusing. So it was. So when we did that show, and I remember there was that quote she gave, I can give you insanity that you can walk away from.
Yeah.
And that felt way healthier. I mean, even from a perspective of coming up in a family where there's working, you just work in class. And it's so hard to take the work day off. You know what I mean? It's just like, I remember particularly if my dad had a bad day, because it was like every day. I mean, like, he spoke all these languages, but he was still treated like a moron.
Right.
He speaks with a heavy Haitian accent. And I remember trying to learn the lesson of don't take your work home with you. And that's when I did that one show. That's what it felt like. I felt like I brought my work home. And now all of a sudden I'm here with my roommate, who I don't know if you remember at the time, was screaming, playing video games while he was playing World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Jesus. But it was just like, he's doing that and I'm trying to stay in a character. And I'm just like, why? I'm home. I'm sleeping. Why do I still need to be this guy?
Yeah, I need to be in there. Yeah.
Right. Who just went through the most horrible thing you could possibly do. And then I had that thought of, how would this help me play like a king?
Right. How?
So it's just like, I don't know what that did. And thankfully, when I went to grad school, I learned other things to put into the toolbox, because realistically, I just knew the reason I was doing this, as I was now able to kind of like come to a mission statement now, was I want to examine, widen, and eventually destroy the box in which we look at Black cis heterosexual masculinity. So it's just like, yeah, if I'm doing this in a way that doesn't make sense to the people I grew up with, how the fuck am I doing this? Right. If I went to my brother, if you remember my brother, really tough 5'4" man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I went to my brother and said, "Yeah, man, I just played this like scientist, so like all day, I'm like trying to," he would be like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, "You know, scientist.
Yeah,
you're doing what my son is doing. You're playing." And it's just like, realistically, there is that sense of just kind of remembering. And me and you, we both connected on this, of just when with our friends in different fields who are sanitation or firemen or police or first responders or all this type of shit, it's good to have those kinds of things in your life to remind you. It's just like, oh yeah, I get to go honor them by pretending to be a paramedic.
Yeah, so that you don't go like, float the fuck away. Like there are a lot of people that we work with that are literally constantly floating the fuck away.
Yeah.
And, it's hard to see, and it can get really frustrating. Like, I remember I was on a show, and me and one of the leads, we were the only people in the show that didn't go to like Juilliard or NYU or like one of the big three or whatever. And like, we were sitting
what's
there.
That like? No, I know.
and like, we were sitting there, and like, somebody was talking about how they went to fucking Juilliard, and she like leaned over and was like, "Dude, where did you go to school?" And I was like, "Oh, I went to school in Florida." And then she was like, "Yeah, I went to school in fucking Florida too." She was like, "We're on this TV show too." And I was like, "We are on this TV show too." And then she was like, "Yeah, we fucking are."
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, no, it's true though. Like, you can be literal working class people and still be doing the same shit without being a pretentious garbage dump. I don't know what else to say.
I love that. You can do this without being a pretentious garbage dump is a quote I'm going to steal.
You should write that down.
But I agree with you. I mean, like, I think some of the elitism that we have separates us from the very people whose stories we're trying to tell. So,
and it's why the public thinks that we're all like these fucking assholes. I don't know. Like, we're just members of a union trying to fucking make our health insurance and trying to hit our goddamn pension credits. Like, we're just like iron workers. We're the same shit. We just craft with our like words and our bodies and our voices. Like, it's.
Yeah. I mean, what I remember during the pandemic thinking, what I do is important. It's not essential. And what I mean by that is just like, I mean, it's important because, like, I mean, sweet Jesus, where would we have been without distraction? During
everyone was watching TVs, shows and movies, you know, like it certainly was it was pretty essential in that way,
right? But when your partner is an essential worker,
oh sure, yes, yeah.
Like, it was one of those things where you're like, oh. And I think for me, and just for me personally, it helped ground me in that it reminded me why I was fucking doing this. I mean, when my boy Travis is doing sanitation in March 2020. You know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah, if I ever get the opportunity to tell your story, I will.
You will, yeah.
And it's like, or, you know, it's one of these, my boy Jay being a fucking, being simultaneously a detective and a communist.
what a combo.
Right, doing God's work. Yeah. But it's like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I want to stay connected to tell you stories. And to some people, it may not be glamorous, but it de-glamorizes it, I think, a little way, because I think that there is this mystification that happens with what we do.
Absolutely.
But for me, I mean, like, Jesus Christ, does it make it, it's why I love what we do. I mean, like, yeah, I think as many frustrations I have with the industry of theater, I mean, like, I think in some respect, I'm going to be performing on stage my entire life.
Sure.
Because, I mean, like, that's what keeps you sharp, in my opinion, or as Denzel Washington says, so why would I disagree with him?
Well, just, yeah.
I mean, it's worked for him. But
We are coming to the end of this thing.
Yes.
We are over an hour, which is great.
Yeah,
it's over. Yeah, man, we pushed and it was great. But so if there's any other questions or comments, please ask them in the next few minutes.
Oh, God, yes.
And I wanted to talk to you about the what you just were in. I didn't get to see it, but I got to like see pictures and read the descriptions and see what I could. Please speak about your last play that you were just in.
Yes, absolutely. I was in Bad Creole by the Dominique Mariso. And that was centered around a character Simone, who was played by Kelly McCreary. Many people know her from Grey's Anatomy. As I found out, because I didn't watch that show. And then the people who came to see the show showed me how much I didn't know, because they were very rabid about Kelly. But her character goes back to Haiti. She's a Haitian American, and she goes back to Haiti to reconnect with her Haitian roots. And it kind of creates this chaos or a conflict between her cousin, who is both Haitian born and living there, over culture, family history, and stuff like that. As the conflict between them is at the center of kind of a rift that happens between the family and their attempt to kind of like bridge that gap. And in that, I played a businessman named Tomas, who the Haitian cousin Gigi is trying to broker a deal with. And she tries to figure out where is that line between commerce and exploitation. Mm-hmm. And the character I played, I believe, made a wonderful argument for, is it exploitation? I mean, so yeah, I love that argument, because it was one of those things where it's like, on the outside, you could look at him and be like, oh, there's the bad guy. But realistically, where would we be without that character on some shape, form, or fashion?
Mm.
That play went from October 8th, and it just closed in December 1st. So yeah, it was a great, I worked with some of the best actors I think I've ever worked with. It was just a really great, it was a really great situation.
Who was the casting director?
The casting director, I want to make sure I get this 100% right.
Yes. Let me pull this up. And then you got a question from the audience.
I actually asked the question while I pull this up.
What advice would you give an aspiring actor?
Oh my God.
I know, man. It's general. So let's.
No, it's, I think what it is just like, it's just such a hard question.
It is. It's a hard one.
Because it's so different than when you and I came up, and it wasn't that long ago.
No.
The two things that keep coming up for me are, you've got to define what success is for you, because unfortunately right now the amount of comparative kind of thing, it's unavoidable. I mean, we're literally on a competitive platform right now where all you can do is just compare yourself to other people.
I know. Yeah, it's hard. It's very, very hard. And like, I came to terms with the fact that I have already made it in my career, and you have too. And come to terms with it is a weird thing to say, because like, I'm paying all my bills. I own a house. I have a family. Like I made it. Like that's, mm-hmm. that's the metric, right? Like, whereas the, whatever you're taught or whatever you come to, like, you're like, I gotta be George Clooney or I fucking suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you bring that back? It's again with the lights. It is, by the way, that casting director, Sajada Pace.
Nice.
The wonderful, I just wanted to make sure I didn't want to mispronounce.
No, it. I just always like to like,
oh no,
that's and also like
shout out to Sajada, shout out to Erica Hart.
And then also they, casting is never properly
no
it is valued, so the more that we can
do that, getting back to the one, you got to define what success is for you, because unfortunately we're on platforms that are all highlight reels. Mm-hmm. And two, a lot more people want you to succeed than you think.
Yeah, that was a huge thing for me too. Like in the beginning, I thought it was just me against fucking everybody.
Yeah.
And like, and I had to like smash through and by myself. And then when I realized that like people like were fans of me, that like casting, so specifically casting directors, mm-hmm. like casting directors are the biggest champions of actors, and we treat them so fucking weird for so long.
So terrible. And
like, we're like scared of them, and like, we don't know what to do, and we don't talk to them like they're people. And then I remember like, once I made that shift, like we're this interlacing.
Yeah.
We're making the same thing, you know, like that, that changed everything.
I mean, yeah. I mean, we throw out some other, Suzanne Scheel. I mean, there's just so many casting directors. And then I didn't think about, because coming out of the program, they didn't really talk to us about casting directors.
They didn't, you mean coming out of a theater program? They didn't teach you about the business? Oh, really weird. Yeah.
They didn't, I mean, I remember like when I made the discovery that I was just like, oh, you're helping me distribute this product.
Right.
Oh, why hasn't anyone talked to me about you? So I think that that hopefully has changed. Yeah, so... I love the fact that you shout out casting directors, because I mean, hell, I don't even know that. I still don't know that if they're, that are they allowed to unionize?
So they're.
I think they just
are now. They are part of the
team. Yes. I forgot that.
Yeah, and I think they just voted so that the assistants are too.
Okay, good.
So I think it's great. I just. Too. Yeah, so yeah, I'm very happy that they're all unionized. Well, not all of them, but they can. Yeah,
but that this is the ball is rolling.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah, I talk a lot. Are there any other questions before you shut me up permanently?
No, that was the last question that we had. Some dude just said dicks into the chat. So thanks for being here, Andy, I think I'm going to wrap it up on that. Dicks. Dicks is the final comment. But
I mean, it always tries to be.
Listen, we try really hard, but at the end of the day, we're probably just dicks. But
I mean, you know, just dude, aspiring to just be less assholes.
I really appreciate you being here and having this ranging, magical, fun-ass conversation.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be as random as I am. Jesus Christ.
Dude, we got to be random on the internet. It's the internet. I'm going to say goodbye to you now. It was great talking to you, and I'll speak to you soon, okay?
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, wait. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on my IMDb. There's also...
Which is already linked and all the stuff. Mm-hmm.
And Instagram at... Oh, that Andy Lucien. It's interesting because I should have put an H in there, but it's four O's. So people think, ooh, that Andy Lucien.
I think it is too. And I like that better. I like it
better. But you know me. Would I have ever said, ooh, that Andy Lucien?
No, but, that's why it's even more funny, because it's like, ooh, that Andy Lucien.
See, that is exactly the way that people said it. And until I heard it, I was like, oh, that's not what I went for. But, you know, it stuck.
It is what it is. And now that's your handle. And.
Absolutely.
Whenever I see you again in person, like when you're not looking, I'm just gonna go, oh, Andy Lucien.
It was supposed to be like this joke, because back when websites were a thing, I wanted the domain whothefuckisandylucien.com.
Nice.
But you know, I didn't want to spend the money, so it was just like the Instagram became that. And Instagram, IMDb, and then I'll like post things occasionally. But yeah.
Awesome. All right, Andy, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you. You're welcome.
Bye. Okay, everybody, thank you so much for being here. We ran over, but I don't care. I had a great conversation, and just Andy's awesome. Once again, we are brought to you by Lucas Roasting Company. Please go check them out. Please use this coupon code. It is the best coffee that I have ever had in my life, and I love coffee. So the Livestream Live is the coupon code, 15% off your first order, delicious coffee. If you need to get coffee before the holidays, the last day to order is the 15th of December to get coffee before the holidays begin. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. If you're, I have a subscription that costs $5 a month, and you'll get access to replays, behind the scenes, anything that I've ever shot or made, and then whatever's going through my head. I have merch, and then all my other links are either in my bio or they're linked on this video. And I really thank you so much again for being here. I'm going to shut up now. Good night. See you next week. Bye.